Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we have two stories related to climate change. First, health and medical experts recently gathered in Washington for talks on climate change and public health. The meeting was held a day after the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency released a report on climate change. The findings are similar to those of an independent research group, the Lancet Commission on Health and Climate. Pete Musto has more.
The Lancet Commission report says the effects of climate change could threaten the past 50 years of gains in public health. Commission project leader Nicholas Watts says the changes in Earth's climate have led to weather extremes. The extremes can create public health risks that he considers very dangerous and unacceptable. Mr. Watts says the changes have led to less rainfall, and this has been linked to a drop in agricultural productivity. The reduced productivity has led, in turn, to an increase in malnutrition, especially among children. Studies have linked climate change to an increased likelihood of flooding in some areas. Mr. Watts says floods are linked to a rise in the rates of infectious diseases, cholera, and problems that result from a breakdown of waste treatment systems. He also notes that the world is getting hotter. In 2003, 70,000 people in Europe died because of higher than normal temperatures. The World Health Organization has warned that serious action is required to reduce global warming emissions. If the reduction does not happen, the WHO says, there will be serious results. By 2030, almost 250,000 people will die every year from the effects of global warming. But the Lancet Commission report also describes growing evidence of the effects of actions to slow climate change. It says that such actions are good for global health. Outdoor air pollution is linked to almost 3 million deaths worldwide. About 1.2 million of those deaths are in China alone. Mr. Watts says a move from coal-fueled power plants to renewable energy, such as sunlight and wind power, can greatly reduce that danger. He also says that moving to renewable energy will lead to fewer people being treated in hospitals and a drop in healthcare costs. He says this will, in turn, help struggling health budgets. Suggesting that people use active forms of transportation, like bicycles, may help reduce diabetes and obesity, he adds. The Lancet Commission suggests several ways to deal with climate change. They include closing coal power plants, increasing the use of renewable energy, investing in health systems, and agreeing to support a global climate treaty. World leaders are expected to meet in Paris in December to sign that measure. Mr. Watts says that politics and complex issues will be debated. But no matter what, he says, the treaty is about public health.
And when you start to do that, you realize that actually the responses to climate change aren't things that necessarily hurt, and they're not necessarily things that are going to result in a lower quality of life. In fact, most of what you want to do to respond to climate change is good for public health and is actually a much brighter future.
Mr. Watts hopes the Commission's report helps unite healthcare experts behind a global treaty. He hopes that the treaty can respond to the risks of climate change. What is good for the planet, he adds, is good for patient care. I'm Pete Musto.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. American researchers spent two summers studying polar bears on the Arctic sea ice. They found that sea ice, where polar bears spend much of their lives, is melting faster than experts predicted it would. The researchers say this change in the animals' home territory is threatening their survival. Christopher Jones Cruz has more.
Polar bears live on the ice. It is where they hunt, mate, and raise their young. But a team of researchers has found that the animals' ice habitat is warming up and shrinking. The team was from the University of Wyoming. Its members worked in the Arctic between 2008 and 2010. Mira Ben-David was among the researchers. She says they learned that polar bears often have trouble finding food. She says the lack of food can affect their mental health.
So with shortening of the spring hunting season, lengthening of the summer season where they are food deprived, and still experiencing difficulties in getting food in the winter, polar bears are stressed physiologically.
Ms. Ben-David says if the animals do not eat enough food in the spring, they are in poor health when winter arrives. The researchers traveled on helicopters and ships. They captured more than 20 polar bears and tested their blood. Before releasing the animals, the researchers equipped them with devices to measure temperature. They then followed the movement of the polar bears on ice and on land. Other studies had suggested that the bears could deal with the lack of food in the summer by reducing their activity, like the animals do when they hibernate in the winter. But Ms. Ben-David says the researchers discovered that did not happen.
We found that polar bears, like their nearest relatives, the brown bears, are incapable of reducing their metabolic rate to the level that we see during winter hibernation. So there are limits on how long they can go without feeding in the summer.
Ms. Ben-David says 20,000 to 25,000 polar bears live in the Arctic. She says the world should take action to protect them.
If we want to be responsible citizens of this planet, we have to do everything in our power to stop, reverse the trend of sea ice loss.
She says countries must work to limit the greenhouse gases that studies have linked to rising temperatures. She says if that does not happen, polar bears could one day disappear from our planet. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. President Barack Obama says Africa has made extraordinary progress. But he says the continent must change its cultures of corruption and discrimination. He spoke last week during his trip to Kenya and Ethiopia. Mr. Obama arrived in Nairobi, the Kenyan capital, last Friday. On Saturday, he spoke with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta about trade and security. Mr. Obama said they promised to continue working together against the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab.
On security, the United States and Kenya are already strong partners, and today we reaffirm that we stand united in the face of terrorism.
During the Africa trip, the Obama administration said the U.S. would give more than $500 million to help fight extremists throughout Africa. On Sunday, Mr. Obama spoke to thousands of Kenyans at a sports center. He talked about some of the problems facing the continent. He urged Africans and their leaders to change their political cultures.
I want to be very clear here. A politics that's based solely on tribe and ethnicity is a politics that's doomed to tear a country apart. It is a failure. Here in Kenya, it's time to change habits and decisively break that cycle, because corruption holds back every aspect of economic and civil life.
He noted that the continent had made many changes in the 50 years since many African nations gained independence from their colonial rulers.
It is long past time to put aside old stereotypes of an Africa forever mired in poverty and conflict. The world must recognize Africa's extraordinary progress.
Mr. Obama visited Ethiopia on Monday. He urged Ethiopia's leaders to end restrictions on their political opponents and mass media. The government controls all of the seats in parliament and limits the country's media. Mr. Obama said Ethiopia has helped in the fight against Al-Shabaab and improved conditions for many of its citizens. Ethiopia was once known as a country of famine and drought. But Mr. Obama said millions of Ethiopians no longer live in poverty. On Tuesday, Mr. Obama spoke to African Union leaders at the AU's new $200 million headquarters in Addis Ababa. The Chinese government paid for and built the AU's new offices. In his speech, Mr. Obama seemed to criticize China.
Economic relationships can't simply be about building countries' infrastructure with foreign labor or extracting Africa's natural resources. Real economic partnerships have to be a good deal for Africa. They have to create jobs and capacity for Africans.
Chinese state media said Mr. Obama went to Africa because U.S. officials are worried about China's growing influence on the continent. The English-language Global Times said the United States is no longer a dominant power in Africa. The Xinhua News Agency said the United States has spent billions of dollars on aid for Africa, but the programs fail to make a big difference. China is Africa's largest trading partner. It has aggressively worked to strengthen ties with the continent in the past few years. China has made tens of billions of dollars in loans to African nations since 2006. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, American Stories. Our story today is called Feathertop. It was written by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Here is Shep O'Neill with the story.
The long cold winter was gone at last. At first, the cold nights went away slowly. Then, suddenly, the warm days of spring started to come. There was new life again in the earth. Things started to grow and come up. For the first time, green corn plants began to show. They pushed through the soil and could now be seen above the ground. After the long winter months, the crows, the big black birds, were hungry, and when they saw the little green plants, they flew down to eat them. Old Mother Rigby tried to make the noisy and hungry birds go away. They made her very angry. She did not want the blackbirds to eat her corn, but the birds would not go away. So, early one morning, just as the sun started to rise, Mother Rigby jumped out of bed. She had a plan to stop those blackbirds from eating her corn. Mother Rigby could do anything. She was a witch, a woman with strange powers. She could make water run uphill, or change a beautiful woman into a white horse. Many nights, when the moon was full and bright, she could be seen flying over the tops of the houses in the village, sitting on a long wooden stick. It was a broomstick, and it helped her to do all sorts of strange tricks. Mother Rigby ate a quick breakfast and then started to work on her broomstick. She was planning to make something that would look like a man. It would fill the birds with fear and scare them from eating her corn, the way most farmers protect themselves from those black, pesky birds. Mother Rigby worked quickly. She held her magic broomstick straight and then tied another piece of wood across it. And already it began to look like a man with arms. Then she made the head. She put a pumpkin, a vegetable the size of a football, on top of the broomstick. She made two small holes in the pumpkin for eyes and made another cut lower down that looked just like a mouth. At last, there he was. He seemed ready to go to work for Mother Rigby and stop those old birds from eating her corn. But Mother Rigby was not happy with what she made. She wanted to make her scarecrow look better and better, for she was a good worker. She made a purple coat and put it around her scarecrow and dressed it in white silk stockings. She covered him with false hair and an old hat. And in that hat she stuck the feather of a bird. She examined him closely and decided she liked him much better now, dressed up in a beautiful coat with a fine feather on top of his hat, and she named him Feathertop. She looked at Feathertop and laughed with happiness. "He is a beauty," she thought. "Now what?" she thought, feeling troubled again. She felt that Feathertop looked too good to be a scarecrow. He can do something better, she thought, than just stand near the corn all summer and scare the crows. And she decided on another plan for Feathertop. She took the pipe of tobacco she was smoking and put it into the mouth of Feathertop. "Puff, darling, puff," she said to Feathertop. "Puff away, my fine fellow. It is your life." Smoke started to rise from Feathertop's mouth. At first, it was just a little smoke, but Feathertop worked hard, blowing and puffing, and more smoke came out of him. "Puff away, my pet," Mother Rigby said with happiness. "Puff away, my pretty one. Puff for your life, I tell you." Mother Rigby then ordered Feathertop to walk. "Go forward," she said. "You have a world before you." Feathertop put one hand out in front of him, trying to find something for support. At the same time, he pushed one foot forward with great difficulty. But Mother Rigby shouted and ordered him on, and soon he began to go forward. Then she said, "You look like a man, and you walk like a man. Now I order you to talk like a man." Feathertop gasped, struggled, and at last said in a small whisper, "Mother, I want to speak, but I have no brain. What can I say?" "Ah, you can speak," Mother Rigby answered. "What shall you say? Have no fear. When you go out into the world, you will say 1,000 things and say them 1,000 times. And saying them 1,000 times again and again, you still will be saying nothing. So just talk. Babble like a bird. Certainly you have enough of a brain for that." Mother Rigby gave Feathertop much money and said, "Now you are as good as any of them and can hold your head high with importance." But she told Feathertop that he must never lose his pipe and must never let it stop smoking. She warned him that if his pipe ever stopped smoking, he would fall down and become just a bundle of sticks again. "Have no fear, Mother," Feathertop said in a big voice, and blew a big cloud of smoke out of his mouth. "On your way," Mother Rigby said, pushing Feathertop out the door. "The world is yours, and if anybody asks you for your name, just say Feathertop, for you have a feather in your hat and a handful of feathers in your empty head." Feathertop found the streets in town, and many people started to look at him. They looked at his beautiful purple coat and his white silk stockings, and at the pipe he carried in his left hand, which he put back into his mouth every 5 steps he walked. They thought that he was a visitor of great importance. "What a fine, noble face," one man said. "He surely is somebody," said another. "A great leader of men." As Feathertop walked along one of the quieter streets near the edge of town, he saw a very pretty girl standing in front of a small red brick house. A little boy was standing next to her. The pretty girl smiled at Feathertop, and love entered her heart. It made her whole face bright with sunlight. Feathertop looked at her and had a feeling he never knew before. Suddenly, everything seemed a little different to him. The air was filled with a strange excitement. The sunlight glowed along the road, and people seemed to dance as they moved through the streets. Feathertop could not stop himself and walked toward the pretty, smiling young girl. As he got closer, the little boy at her side pointed his finger at Feathertop and said, "Look, Polly, the man has no face. It is a pumpkin." Feathertop moved no closer, but turned around and hurried through the streets of the town toward his home. When Mother Rigby opened the door, she saw Feathertop shaking with emotion. He was puffing on his pipe with great difficulty and making sounds like the clatter of sticks or the rattling of bones. "What's wrong?" Mother Rigby asked. "I am nothing, Mother. I am not a man. I am just a puff of smoke. I want to be something more than just a puff of smoke." And Feathertop took his pipe and with all his strength smashed it against the floor. He fell down and became a bundle of sticks as his pumpkin face rolled toward the wall. "Poor Feathertop," Mother Rigby said, looking at the heap on the floor. "He was too good to be a scarecrow, and he was too good to be a man. But he will be happier, standing near the corn all summer and protecting it from the birds. So I will make him a scarecrow again."
You have heard the American story, Feathertop. It was written by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Your storyteller was Shep O'Neill. The producer was LaJuan Davis. Listen again next week at this time for another American story in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Embers.